Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh, is daf Samach Zayin, and I want to get us back into the flow of things here, because it's a little bit complicated to remember. Basically, we've been trying to figure out why Shmuel is not exactly sure of what his psak was in the case where somebody had said that he gave a psak, but he said he's not sure whether his psak is right. So the case was that somebody set two people to be kesev and to give the get. They said to the sefer to write it. They didn't write it themselves, and he did, and they themselves signed it. So Shmuel said if she got married, she should get divorced. But I'm not sure. I gotta get more information about this and have somebody tell me what the psak halach is. So we had two approaches as to what it was that Shmuel was not sure about, because there's two possibilities over here. One possibility is that he wasn't sure that when he told two people to be kitvu, whether that meant that they had to write the get themselves, or it was sufficient that they just signed the get. That was one question, possibly. And the other one was, if they told a sofer to do something that they were told to do, it wouldn't be kosher, perhaps, because of the din of mili lo nimsar l'shliach, that you cannot give over words that were told to you to do. You can't give that over to somebody else. You got to do it yourself. So the question that we ended up with, if you recall, was how in the world would there be any question whatsoever about whether the din is that you need to write it yourself or you just need to sign it. Even if you need, the halacha is that you just need to sign it, but how in the world could you have told a sefer to write it, since Shmuel himself holds that mili lo nimsar l'shliach? So what in the heck could possibly have been the question? So the Gemara said that it could be that even though Rabbi Yossi paskins mili lo mimser and l'shliach, and that should mean that he could not tell the sefer, but Rabbi Yossi would be moda in a case where you were told to tell the sefer, that there you can be the equivalent of the Baal to be modia to the sefer lichtov. So therefore, maybe that was the question. Was the tzivoy that you yourself have to write, in which case you can't tell the sofer to write it if you have to write it, or was the question you only have to sign? And they could be told to tell whoever you want to actually write it. That would be included, since he only said you have to sign it. That was the question. Now, that was predicated on the assumption that Aliba de Rabbi Yossi, if you said, Imru, Amar, Imru, if the Baal said you tell it to somebody else to do it, that's not called Mili lo mimsar l'shliach. So we got into a whole question of a rather complex raya that it cannot be that Rabbi Yossi is made in a case of Amar Imru. And what was that? The question was like this. In the event that somebody would actually have told a sofer that he is supposed to actually, he signed. And the people told him, yeah, you can sign. So we had the case, remember, of Ksav Sefer. By the way, this is where the names, is very sweet, the names of the Sfarim, the Chasam Sefer and the Ksav Sefer, right? You remember all of those Sfarim, is based on this Gemara. So the Mishnah talks about the Ktav Sofer, and Rabbi Yirmiyah said it means Chatam Sofer, and that if a Sofer signed after having written the get for someone, that the halacha was Aliba de Rabbi Yirmiyah, Chatam Sofer plus one aid, it's kosher. So in other words, the Sofer himself can sign. So the question is that Reb Chista Tainet, this could only be true according to Reb Yossi. Why? Because Reb Yossi holds that Mili Arlo Mimser and the Shliach. And if that's the case, a Sofer would never have signed in the event that he could have possibly been signing Shalom Kedin. And therefore, it must be that since Halibah de Rabbi Yossi, Mila lo Mimser and L'Shliach, the sofer would only have signed if the husband told him. If you hold, however, Halibah de Rabbi Meir, And Aliba de Rabbi Meir Mimsarin, Mili Ar Mimsarin Lashliach. Then, look who finally shows up at the end. So if we hold Mili is actually Mimsarin Lashliach, so then we got a big problem. Because how do you know that this sofer actually signed because he was supposed to sign? He doesn't know any better. And it's a very awkward situation. What's the awkward situation? Suppose the Baal had told the Edom to sign and that they were basically supposed to only tell the sofer to write the get. Fine. So they tell the sofer to write the get, which is perfectly okay, according to Rabbi Meir, that Mili are Mimsaran. And then the sofer says, okay, so I'll sign. So the guys are embarrassed to tell the sofer, really sorry, but you can't sign because the husband only asked us to sign. So because to cover their awkwardness, so they say, sure, go ahead and sign. So he signs. He wasn't really allowed to sign. We have two witnesses now on the get, and one of them is not a witness because the husband did not tell him to be chotim, right? So now, because of that, what should we have done if we care about a situation like this? We should have made a general takana. Sofrim don't sign. Okay, so if Sofrim don't sign, then we never get into awkward situations, right? Perfect. But since we did not make such a takana, it could only work out Aliba de Rabbi Yossi. So since Aliba de Rabbi Yossi knows Sofer would be stupid enough to sign because he knows Mili lo Mimsron Shliach, so if he didn't hear it directly from the husband, then he would never have signed anyway, so it's not a problem. But now, if you're trying to tell me that even Aliba de Rabbi Yossi, in the case of Amar Imru, and somebody was told to tell the Sofer, by the husband, tell the sofer to write, so then you could run into exactly the same problem. Imagine a situation like this. A guy tells the sofer, tells the shliach, go tell the sofer to sign, and then tell these two other enim to sign. Then you're left with the same situation. The sofer says, okay, I wrote, so I'll sign it now. It's just as awkward. So that even Aliba de Rabbi Yossi, we would have to make the takana, right? Alon, what are you so tired about tonight, man? It's a nice Shabbos. Come on, baby. Okay, so if that's the case, it's clearly a proof that there is no such halacha, and Rabbi Yossi would never have allowed the Mili to be Mimsran in the event that he was Omar Imru. So what's going on? That's where we had gotten up to, and the last thing that we read was, since the halacha is, that even though if you would have done such a thing, it would be kosher, but lo yaseh chen b'Yisrael, don't chas v'shalom ever do something like that. So who's going to do that? So because of that, we're not going to run into these awkward situations. And remember that the Rabbanan were not geyser in situations that rarely come up. That's a mili de lo shchicha, so lo geyser b'Rabbanan. That would be the problem. Now today we have to go a little bit weiter in the same sugya, because we left off in the middle, it was getting late. So we're up to Velechush Dilma Omaluhu Levetre Imru Lesofer. So now we have still one other possibility, and that is, that starts now on the fifth line. Why aren't we nervous? Forget about the case where somebody would have said to go ahead and tell a sofer, and then go ahead and tell the Edim. That's true. There it does say, don't ever do anything like that. But how about a case where you told two people, why don't you guys sign directly? Don't tell anybody to sign. Just tell the sofer that he should write. So in such a case, l'chora, there should be exactly the same situation. And we would run into the question, the Baal never said to the sofer to sign, and he would sign. Now, if you're telling me that it's going Aliba de Rabbi Yossi, then we should have made a takana that such a thing should never take place, and therefore Sofrim should never sign to avoid this. Answers the Gemara, even this case, given the Amar Kasher Velote Aseken B'Yisrael, don't think that that was only said about the case where he said to people, you tell other Edom to sign. No, it's even if he told them to sign. Now, this right now does not make very impressive sense to us because we don't know why we were told, don't ever do such a thing. So to us, it sounds like the same case. But you're going to see in a moment that it is not the same case. So there's a very good reason for us to have thought that in the event that a husband tells two Edim, you sign, just tell the sofer that he should write, why that would have been different and there would have been no problem of actually doing this be Yisrael. So we're going to get to this in a moment. But let's just see inside first. This case also would not have happened because nobody would have done such a thing in this case also. Because Hanami, kosher v'lo te'aseh. Now, first of all, not everybody agrees, Bichlal, that that's true. So, Hani, chalamad yomar kosher v'lo te'aseh. It's very nice if you hold that that's true. And that you're not supposed to do this. Not everybody agrees to that. How about, according to the Mandi Omru, it says, what's the problem? Kasher v'teaseh, go right ahead. What are you worried about? So, how are you going to answer that? Okay. All right, so I'd rather find an answer that works according to everybody, right? So the truth is, of course, there's no way out of this. Reb Yossi himself holds there is no case where Mili is Bamser and Lashliach. Doesn't matter whether Amar Imru, Lo Amar Imru, according to Rabbi Yossi, something that is not tangible cannot be given over to Shlichut. So even if the husband had said, why don't you tell the sofer in my name to write the get, that still wouldn't be good, Alibi Rabbi Yossi. But Shmuel could still understand things exactly the way we said. Why? Because Shmuel might hold like the overall dinner of Rabbi Yossi, that Mili Lo Mimsra and the Shliach, but Shmuel would agree that if Amar Imru, that then it would be Nimsra L'Shliach, in which case Shmuel could say that the Sefer, in my case, wrote it, and that would be fine, even though he was told to write it by the Shliach. And my only question is, maybe the meaning of telling the Shliach, Sov get l'ishti, is that they have to personally write it and not just sign it. That was my question. And therefore, Adayin Tzorech Talmud. So we have now the two different ways of understanding it. It's true that Alibi Rabbi Yossi Tarti Omar, Shmuel only agrees with him in the main din, that Mili Lo Mimsur and the Shliach, and Shmuel argues with him in the other din, that if Imur Amar Imru, according to Shmuel, no, there I don't agree with Rabbi Yossi. Okay, by the way, you said this, this halacha, have we paskin, that, we said, Omar Lefanav, Rabbi Shimon, we were talking before that Shmuel Paskin, quoting Rabbi, that halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and now we said he only holds that way partially, but that wasn't the whole story. Let me tell you the whole story of what was said in the name of Rabbi. Seguf, Omar Shmuel Amar Rabbi, halacha Rabbi Yossi, the Omar Mili Lo Mimsum L'Shliach. Now look, the story is a little bit more complicated than that, because Rabbi's son, Rabbi Shimon, was very shocked at his father paskin this way. So he asked him, Omar Lefanav Rabbi Shimon Bar Rabbi, Abba, Miachash Rabbi Meir, V'chanina Ish Eina, Yecholkin or Rabbi Yossi. Remember in our Mishnah, we had two shitas that paskined not like that. And it says beferish in the Mishnah that Chanina Ish Ono, he went ahead and he asked Rabbi Akiva in prison and the whole deal, right? So they don't agree. It was Rabbi Yossi who said at the end, well, we're not impressed. We have a Kabbalah. Even if you said the best that our God opened Shem Yerushalayim, they wouldn't have had a right to make a shliach, et cetera, right? But, I mean, why in the world would you paskin like Rabbi Bedavka, like Rabbi Yossi, connected everybody? I mean, this was like quoted from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir disagrees. So why would you paskin like a yochid? So Rabbi said to him, shh. My entire Izun, my sweet son, let me tell you something. If you had ever met Rabbi Yossi, you wouldn't ask a dumb question like that. You know, shtok benista, shut up. Lo ra'ita Rabbi Yossi. Let me tell you something. If you would ever have met Rabbi Yossi, then you would have known why I pass like Rabbi Yossi. He's always right. That's why. So, umole ra'ita nimuko imo. You would have figured out that you can't argue with Rabbi Yossi. The guy's insanely brilliant. Everything that he says, he backs up 100%. There's no way a paskin not like Rabbi Yossi. And this is basically in the famous Braisa, where Isi ben Yehuda, he was talking about all the various Talmidei Chachomim of the times, And so he was meina the different ways that various Talmidei Chachamim had structured their Torah. And he said like this, Rabbi Meir is both a Chacham and a Sofer, which is a very unusual situation, because the Chacham the Sofer means that there's a profound connection between the Psukim that is Isaac, when somebody is a Sofer, literally a Sofer, and that was Rabbi Meir would say, Lavlara, no, if you remember the whole story and so on. So he was very mechuber to the actual Psukim and the shapes of the letters and the Diyukim. That's a tremendous mile in a Chacham. And that shows up in all of his learning. Rabbi Yehuda is a chacham l'kishiyirtze. So some learn this to mean sort of like what your father told you, you know. Azervil is a chacham, you know. In the rare situations where he puts his mind to something, yeah, he could be very smart, but generally, oh, it's a little bit cynical statement to say about Rabbi Yehuda. So the nicer pshat is that Rabbi Yehuda is on such a madriga that no matter what the circumstances are, and he's in the middle of whatever, if he needs to get into something, he just blocks out the entire world, and he's a chacham kishiyirtze. At any point at all, he can be a chacham. Whereas most people, if things are going nuts around them, even if they want to, they can't really concentrate. So that's what he's saying. It's an incredible level of concentration. Now, Rabbi Tarfon, he was like a pile of nuts. Now, I know a lot of people that are like piles of nuts, but they're not those kind of nuts that we're talking about. The way that I understand, I must tell you, the Mefarshim are not Mefarish this way, but I'll tell you what I'm convinced the pshat is, that because it's the only way that the dugma is absolutely a perfect metaphor, and in which it's definitely different than any of the other approaches of any of the other Chachamim listed here, which if you learn the Pshatim of Rashi and other Mefarshim, it doesn't come out to be so clearly separated. I think that this is an absolutely perfect metaphor for the idea of holism, right? In holism, if you move one piece, everything has to adjust in order to be able to find a new place. If you have an interrelated system and you change one item, then either everything fits or the whole thing falls apart. So therefore, any halacha that he's paskening is, oh, there we go, the Rebbe likes it, we're okay. So then what happens is that everything falls right smack bang into place. Okay, so then if that's the case, it's a tremendous madriga in his learning. Rabbi Yishmo, he's like a store that's got everything right in stock. Now, you know what happens? Usually you go to a store and you ask him, I'd like such and such a kind of wine. This is Rashi's dogma. Yes, sir, but we don't have that in stock right now, but it's coming in next week. You know, it's always like that. Of course, it's coming in next week. Next week you come in. Oh, the shipment was delayed. Okay. So basically, there's some kind of chachomim that they assume they're going to have the approach, but they don't have it yet. By him, everything is always in stock. So that's good. Rabbi Akiva is an Otzer Balum. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi explains, Otzer Balum is the pshat that Rabbi Akiva's Derech HaLimud was that he first took in everything. In other words, he did not attempt to structure anything until he had all of the information. After he got all of the information, and that would allow for the maximum interrelatedness of every piece with everything else, because if you start structuring early, then certain things you believe are not relevant to other parts of your structure, right? This is basically what happened in science for so many centuries, in which people really worked very hard at completely different compartments. So if you were a chemist, all you worked on was chemistry. You were a physicist, you worked on physics. You were a mathematician. Again, absolutely no realization that all of this is part of one incredible yichud, which has, is Rabbi Akiva understood that there's nothing that is not nogea something else. On the other hand, obviously, you can't have a complete mishmash of everything without having any structure. So he structured things into their separate compartments, which is what an Otzer Bolum means. The closest thing that we have to this idea today is the four-part laundry basket. Black, colored, color fest. Okay, so that's an Otzer Bolum. Basically, each thing has a compartment. And that he only did after he created everything, brought everything in. whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was a kupat rochlim. So a kupat rochlim is very different. It's true that it's got everything, but it's structured up front. So in other words, when you've got the Avon man going out, there's a kupat shel rochlim, right? So he's got everything in, as he puts it into his case, he puts everything into its particular place. So it's very good to have everything and to have everything structured, but not when it starts structured, nowhere near as good as Rabbi Akiva's. It's not the same darga. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a kupa shel bisamim. So over there, he actually has a tremendous number of different types of bisamim as opposed to the various brands that he's carrying. And each one is prepared to give to his particular need at that moment to the customer. Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is kav. He didn't teach very much, but everything that he taught was naki. So we paskin always like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And Rabbi Yossi was nimuko imai. Rabbi, that's why we brought all of this, just to back up Rabbi. Rabbi Shimon was tochein harbei umotzi kim'a. Now, Rabbi Shimon ground an awful lot of stuff, meaning that he went through an analysis of a tremendous amount of material. He let very little of it drop away. Tana, he did forget things. There were certain small amount of things he forgot, but the things that he forgot, he wanted to forget. And he was eno motzi ela subi. What it is that he forgot, he considered to be the less reliable and less meaningful, and he wanted to stick only with those things that were clear to him, lahalacha. V'chein amar Rabbi Shimon l'talmidav. Banai, listen to me. Shinu midotai. Shemidotai trumot mitrumot midoshav shel Rabbi Akiva. So first of all, you see over here the way that they refer to what it is that they're doing is all in terms of sets. These are midot. He's not saying learn my halachas, learn my Torah. He's saying, look at the way that I measure things out, bedavka in terms of midot. So everything that we've been talking about over here, you'll notice, is in terms of set, whether it's in terms of otzer bolum, or if it's in terms of the dugma of the Avon man, or the bitsamim, whatever it is, but it's always something that has to do with something that's packaged as a particular group. So when he says, look at my sets, what he's saying is that you're right that Rabbi Akiva was much broader than me, utilized all of the material, but remember, not everybody's going to be like Rabbi Akiva. So I can tell you, I worked everything through and I've reduced things so that it's much easier for you to learn. And it's like la creme de la creme. If truma is that which emerges, remember, truma is not only la creme, but truma means it's the Hebrew word for emergence, essentially. So what emerges out of all of the kolam of Rabbi Akiva, I have made kolam of. That's the best way for you to learn. And I recommend learning my midas. Midotai trumot, bitrumot midotav shel Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, getting back to the sugya, we never explained why it would be a problem to be Amar Imru. What's the big deal? So you tell somebody, go, tell a sofer to write, and tell Edim to sign. So why is that problematic? I don't understand. Don't do that. Omer Avuna Merav, you said, kosher, but lo te'asezo b'Yisrael, chas v'chalila, we don't do such terrible things. Like what terrible things? I don't understand. So, Omar le Ula le Nachman, I don't get it. Some say Nachman asked Ula. I mean, if it's kosher, what's wrong? So, Amaylo te'asezot b'Yisrael. What exactly is the risk of such a psak? Omar le, because it opens up the door to a woman who's desperate for a divorce hiring witnesses to go ahead and to claim that they are supposed to be signing on this. I understand, says the Gemara. You can always say that. We never have a chashash that people are going to hire witnesses. Did you ever hear of such a thing that someone who signed, well, we don't know, maybe he was paid to sign? Of course not, because basically the fact that his John Hancock is on there in black and white means that ultimately this is going to come back to haunt him. People can't get away with that kind of thing. Remember, that's the whole point of the shtar and Eidos. It gets all over the place. And in the end, when it turns out that this whole thing comes under a court attack and we can't support it and so on, so then he is finito. I mean, so why all of a sudden are we chashashir, asked the Gemara? Nichashina? We're not afraid of hiring false witnesses. V'atanya, edima chatumim al stemekach, or al get isha, lo chashu chachamim ledavar zeh. We never had such a thing that we should be afraid that somebody, even if we know people are desperate to get divorced or people are desperate to get a field, but they know in the end it's going to come and destroy them. So they would do that. No way. You don't understand. That's if they have to sign falsely. Of course they're not going to do that because then it will come back to haunt them. But let me tell you something. Suppose this would be mutter to tell somebody, the husband told me to tell you that you should sign. Oh, now that's a whole different can of worms. Because there, the person who's lying is not necessarily going to be caught. The guy that signs, he thinks he's signing honestly. So he's not nervous about putting his signature on it, right? As he was told, the husband said to sign. But the person who said, the husband said to sign, he's got plausible deniability. Well, what is this guy talking about? I mean, I don't know. Probably they paid him and now he wants to blame it on me. This is a frame job, baby. And forget it, you know. So he's not nervous because he didn't put anything out there. So that opens up the door to a situation where indeed the woman might actually hire somebody to say that the husband said to sign. And then it's not really traceable. That's different. So Maisa lo avdin, they're not going to sign themselves, but dibure ka'amre, they may certainly say to somebody, the husband said, because they were paid to say, the husband said, who's going to be able to trace it? Okay, now here's where we discover why the two cases that we've said before about Amar Imru are very different. Because if you're talking about a case where you said to two people, you sign, and you say to the sofer that he signs, I understand that then she can go out and hire witnesses. But suppose the case would be that you would still tell the sofer to write, but enochinami, you couldn't tell the witnesses to sign. So then what would be about a case like this? If you tell somebody, tell the sofer, this is Amar Imru, tell the sofer to write the get, and you sign, you two guys, you sign yourself. So what can go wrong over there? There's nothing that can go wrong because the Edim are unable to sign, and so is the sofer unable to sign unless he's told to sign, right? And we're not allowing Amar Imru for Edus. We're only allowing Amar Imru for the writing of the get. And what would be the problem over there? There shouldn't be a problem. And yet we said in that case that it's still lo te'aseh. So what about that case? So let's look at that. Imru l'sofer v'yichtov v'atem chatomu. You sign. Don't tell anybody else to sign. You sign yourselves. What's it done over there? So Rav Chisda says, it's the same thing. Kasher v'lo te'aseh. Rabbi Baruch Chanan says, no. Kasher v'te'aseh. No, it's exactly the same thing. Whereas Reb Nachman Amar Kasher Velotei Aseh, why? Because we're gozer one case because of the other. Once we open up the door to Amar Imru, these shitas are very machmir, and what'll be if somebody doesn't know the din, the difference between Amar Imru Lagabi Edim and Amar Imru Lagabi the Sofer? So we have to answer one case because of the other. Every door, one door after the next door, argued about this thing. So there were machlokas in door after door. Reb Chisda, Rabbi Baruch Chanan, Reb Nachman, Reb Sheshes, Rabba, Reb Yosef, same machlokasin, Rabba Amar Kasher Lo Te'aseh, Reb Yosef Amar Kasher V'Te'aseh, some flip the shitas of Rabba and Reb Yosef. Okay, now let's get to the last part of our mission. Amar La'asara, Kitvu Get. So the last thing we had in the Mishnah is that if you said to 10 people, write a get. So we had the difference between Kulchem, all of you, or just, you say to 10 people, take care of it. So the halacha over there in the Mishnah is, if you don't say kulchem, so then anyone is able to write the get. Any two are able to sign. Any one is able to be the shliach lo halacha to deliver the get. If you said kulchem, then you have the problem. Let's take a look in the bright. Amar la asara ki tvu get to tunu leishti. What's the din? One person writes for everybody. He obviously didn't mean that everybody should hold a pen. So one person writes for them all. But what if he said, kulchem? If he said, I want all of you, ketovu. So then they all have to be present while it's being written. So echad kotev, but only bema'amat kulam. Suppose he said, holichu get lishti. Any one of these 10 people can be molech for everybody. But what if he said, kulcham holichu? Then they all have to walk together. So echad molech b'mamat kulam. It doesn't mean they all have to hold it, but they all have to walk to get to her. Now, the question would be, what would be if somebody starts counting the people? So he says, okay, you, number one, you, number two, new, you, number three, right? And he actually counts that out. And then he says, the heck, just get that get, right, and sign it. He never said the word kulchem, but he did start counting them out, or perhaps he counted all. We'll see what the count, what the dinim are. So Ravuna says, if you count them, it's not the same as saying all of you. And Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Dimin Reima Amar, Mana, if you counted everyone, Hareyu Kukulchem, it is the same as saying Kulchem. And Rav Papa explained that they're not arguing with each other. There's two different cases over here. One was talking about a case where you were mona all the people that are in the group. So you, number one, number two, number three, you went through the whole thing. And one was referring that you were only mona some of the group. And then you stopped. Now, as far as which direction, it's more mashma. Some say one direction and some say the other direction. So Amar Lo Lahai Gisa. So some say that if you tell the ones, specific ones, you count. So some say that that means if you count all of them, so then obviously you were makbid the same as the kulchem. But if you only said some of them, so then that doesn't mean you're makbid on them. You're saying out of these group, then I want these two people to sign, one person to write, and so on. You were just telling which group it is that the signers and the deliverers have to be taken out of, because you didn't count everybody. Whereas others say just the opposite. If you mentioned one, two, three, four, then you want dafka those people to be doing it. Masha Inkein, if you mentioned all of them and you didn't say kulchem, so then you were just saying you guys are all empowered to be able to do it one by one. Or two, obviously, for the signatures and so on. Okay, so that would be the different ways of understanding it, Lahai Gisa and Lahai Gisa. Anyway, in order to avoid all of this craziness, because there's so many different ways of reading the case where a guy said kulchem and how he said it and whether he counted everybody, this could lead to really a big mess where the husband said, well, I meant that everybody has to be there and only 6 people out of the 10 people. But you didn't say kulchem, but I counted. And now we're going to have to start worrying which one is laigi. So forget it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda made a takana. That any time that you're giving a get in front of a bunch of people and you're talking to those people and telling them that you guys have to do it. So then the way that the sofer has to actually write the get is that the Baal said to us, Kitovu o kolchon, o kolchad chad minchon. That way he doesn't get into problems. He writes into the get that any person who actually would write or any two that would sign, Chatomu o kolchem o kolchre minchon. Deliver the get, o vilu o kolchen o kolchad chad minchon. That way there's no possibility of the husband coming back and said, yeah, but I meant, what do you mean you meant? This is the get that you commissioned. Don't tell us what you meant. And that way there would never be any problem and people wouldn't be able to give a get that afterwards could be tied and wasn't kosher. Oh, my Rava, that's a horrible takana. Makes things worse. Because remember, all of our takanas are for dummies. It has to work for dummies. The more complicated you make a takana, the more likelihood is somebody's going to mess up. So if somebody leaves out one of these words, let's say he says, "Ktovu kulchem o kolecha bechbechem, chatomu shnechem," and he forgets to write in, right, kulchem, and he forgets to say, "O kolecha v'yachad." I know, you'll leave out one of them. I mean, for heaven's sakes, the more you have, the more problems you have. And he ends up leaving one of them out. So now people will for sure say the get is puzzle. Forget about it. I'll tell you what to do. Ela amarava. The only thing that a sofer should write in a get that is being given in front of a group of people where these mistakes could be made is any one of you, not all of you or any one of you, any one of you, we were told, any one of you, which means makes absolutely no difference, or any two of you to sign, and that's all you write. Any one of you should deliver, and this way you don't get into the, yes, it sounds very impressive, and it absolutely impresses the pants off of anybody. Oh, kulchem, oh, kol echad v'yachad. I mean, if you love legalese, the more complicated it is, the better. But if you want to avoid problems, just simply say, kol chad minchon, and Doc is now ready for the big moment. Here we go. Hadron Allah Omer. Well, that's it. Doc, a whole week you've been practicing. There we go. Okay, so now we're getting into some very, very fascinating dapim, which are going to strike you as having absolutely nothing to do with Gittin and being full of very fanciful kind of stories. So we must remember once again that people do not always look at the world the way we look at the world, right? So we have a very constricted and rational and do not take into consideration really the way that our minds interface with reality, do not take into consideration the way that our minds formulate realities, create realities. You know, so to us, it's a big deal if somebody is hallucinating. I mean, they obviously have to be put into a hospital. The fact that we hallucinate reality all the time, I mean, that the only difference between hallucinations and our supposed reality is that one is a mass hallucination and the other one doesn't seem to be backed up by anybody else's hallucination. But in terms of the reality of what our brain is generating in terms of what information is coming in, there's not really very much connection between the two. Okay, so once upon a time, it was very clear to people that ultimately all things are essentially mental problems and not really that much defined by the particular physical things that cause them. So, yeah, okay, there's physical things, but it's the way that we respond to those things that make the difference. So the opening of the perek sets the tone for the dapim that we're going to be talking about. So when we want to talk about someone who is having a psychotic episode, right? That's really what we're getting into over here, how this is a continuation of the dinim of shlichut. So remember, we have to know what it is that the husband is saying and so on. Precisely, what does he mean by kulchem? And what does he mean by ksovu? What does he mean by ktu? Et cetera, et cetera. Fine, that's all great. But what about, what does he mean by meaning? What about that? In other words, whenever we have things like this, remember, even in terms of modern day legalese, I of sound mind, and who the heck says you're of sound mind? Exactly. So the question over here is, what about if he clearly is not of sound mind? So what we call the case over here, not of sound mind, is somebody who has been seized by a cordiacus. Now, that's something like a cross between a crocodile and a rhinoceros. So it's a cordiacus. And this is not a good thing to have in your brain. And if you do, you really don't know what you're talking about. So suppose somebody was grabbed by a cordiacus, and he says, write a get to my wife. Nonsense. Lo amar klum. We pay no attention to people in the throes of a cordiacus.
Rebbe, it's called Cardiacus Arrest. Please have a drink.
So therefore, if he says, write a get, we don't take it seriously. Now, suppose a guy who was not in the throes of a Cardiacus attack, he says write a get, and then he's attacked by a Cardiacus, probably thrown on him by his wife. And the Cardiacus in that state, he says, no, no, don't write that get for my wife. Pay no attention to the man behind the Cardiacus. Ein dvarav ha'achronim klum. So you don't even have to have him reassert, no, no, I still want you to give a get. It's like that part of his mentality disappears. Now, how about if a guy was not insane? He just lost his ability to communicate, maybe had a stroke. He couldn't talk. So then we asked him, shall we indeed write this get for your wife? The guy's in a desperate situation. And he indicates with his head, yes, yes, please. So basically, we have three different times that we need to check his mentality. So we have questions that we could tell if the answer is supposed to be yes or the answer is supposed to be no. If he answers three times on a no, no, and on a yes, yes, so then that would mean that we could assume that his mind is functional, and on that basis, Hari Elo Yichtevu Vayitnu. Now, what exactly is a Cardiacus? That's the question. Omashmuel. Well, it means what happens to you when you get bitten. Now, bitten obviously doesn't mean literally bitten, but it means that you've been attacked after drinking this fresh wine out of the press. And that really leaves you, completely confused. I mean, so couldn't we just say that? Couldn't we say somebody that drank too much fresh wine and was confused? I mean, what's the Cardiacus? Listen, Mishnah Shecho Yayin Chadash. Ah, but you see, it's very important to know the name of the monster that's attacked you because you need to be able to deal with it. And if you know what it is, then you can deal with it. That whatever happens to the brain of a person who is affected by that, the problem is this monster Cardiacus. You have to be able to deal with that Cardiacus. But who cares? Why is giving it a name useful? L'mai nafkamina. Ah, because if you're writing a kamia, so you're going to write some kind of exorcism, right? Are you going to get rid of the monstrous Cardiacus? Well, you have to know the name. I mean, you can't just write a Cardiacus wipeout without knowing even the name of the Cardiacus. The Cardiacus will burst out laughing. Look at this idiot. He doesn't even know who I am, and he's telling me to run away. So, like, we had Gemaras like that, right? You know, you look like you're a big Talmid Chacham. You don't even know Aleph Beis because you don't know my name. All right. So if that's the case, what was that? Bartimaeus, right? Yeah. So that was Bartimaeus. That whole series just came out recently. Well, maybe it's only recently in my brain. My brain's always good, I guess. Anyway, so if you're going to write a kamia, so you got to know what a Cardiacus is. Okay, but I mean, suppose I don't write a kamia. Like, what would I do if I'm a doctor for a Cardiacus? Oh. Well, then you have to have, like, really lean meat on a nice barbecue and chamra marka. Now, Rashi learns chamra marka means wine mixed with a lot of water. But others learn chamra marka, dafka means very strong wine. Okay, but whatever, that's, you know, if you eat that kind of meat, it will restore you. Omar Abaya, my mommy always told me, and I remember when Abaya talks about his mommy always telling him it's never his mommy because he didn't have a mommy. His mother died as soon as he was born. So he would always call his nanny his mommy. So he would always refer to my mommy always told me. So anyway, she always told me that if you've got a sunstroke, so then Lashimsha, it probably doesn't mean really a sunstroke, but it means you got overheated. And now your body's not going back to normal. So if this is the first day that you ended up with this high temperature and so on, So the first time is make sure that you actually drink a kuza de maya. So that's, you know, that's the idea of feed a cold, starve a fever. You heard that? Okay, so this is the kuza de maya for the case of the fever. Probably not a very good idea in terms of modern medicine to let yourself get completely dehydrated. But again, remember that Tosva says, don't ever dare try any of these things because they're disasters. And it only works for the particular, you know, milieu in which people relate it to things in this way. So I'm sure we've spoken about this many times, the way that the relationship to illnesses and even what the illnesses are changed completely over the course of a few generations, in which what one generation suffered from, by the time 100 years passed, nobody even knows what those things are. They never heard of them. It's the weirdest thing. But anyway, okay, so the medical books are full of things that we can't even identify exactly what they're talking about. So whatever this is, the Shimsha Bat Yuma, Akuza de Maya. Now, if you've got 2 days worth of this shimsha, then the best thing is bloodletting. And, oh, by the way, this is an actual beautiful story. We've talked about this, but this was a beautiful story in the James Herriot series. So he had this case of this horse that was like totally overheated. And the only thing that they could do was to actually, this, he was like so shocked when he saw Siegfried doing this, because it was like this ancient remedy. Nobody ever does this thing. And he had this phlegm that would open up the veins of the horse. Jesus, so much blood was coming out of this horse. And Lamaisa, he actually cured the horse. Apparently that was a tremendous amount of blood pressure. And he says, this is the only thing that saved the life of this horse. So, okay, you never know. If you have a 3-day-old shimsha, so then what you should do is eat the same thing that we said about the kordiakis, bisra sumka, agumre, v'chamra marka. Now, how about if it's a chronic type of shimsha? So shimsha atikta. So then this thing is sure to kill you. So bring a black tarnagolta. So bring a back chicken, tear it open, 2 directions, shesiva erev. Shave your head and put the chicken on your head until it sticks to your head and dries. Then you're ready to faint. Okay. So then get down into some water, stand up to your neck in water until you feel like you're about to collapse and die. Then swim out, get out of that water and sit until you feel better. Now, if that doesn't work, I wonder why. If that doesn't work, eat some leeks. So lecho karte, and then go down into the water again until your neck, and sit there until you feel like you're about to keel over, and then swim out, and that should help. Leshimsha, so we talked about getting overheated. So yeah, for overheating, you would eat bedavka bisra sumka, lean meat, and then you would put that on a barbecue, and you would have this chamra marka. Again, we mentioned that there's 2 approaches to what chamra marka is. But if you've been frozen, letalga, you've been exposed to too much cold, then take fatty meat and make a barbecue of fatty meat and then drink real chamra chaya without watering it down at all. Now, Rav Amram Chasida was hated by the Reish Galusa servants. Why? Because he was a real frum guy. They didn't call him Rav Amram Chasida for nothing. And he refused to eat there. He said their kashrus is no good. He would never eat the Reish Galusa's house. These guys were dying to get rid of Rav Amram Chasida. Okay. So anyway, so one time, he would have to visit the Reish Galusa, and he would always make them problems for the staff. So they actually put him to sleep, mamish, in the snow, meaning, you know, they would sneak into the room after he goes to bed, open up the window so that in the middle of the night he would freeze, wake up in the morning with his body temperature like about ready to die. And so they would make him sleep like that. The next day they would come. So, "Oh, sir, what could we bring you for room service?" So he says to himself, anything that I tell them, they're going to do the exact opposite, right? Okay, so he says, okay, I'll tell you what to bring me. So he says, I need some very lean meat and wine that's been like completely watered down. So of course they bring him very fatty meat on the barbecue and wine without any water, which is exactly what he needed. So he brought that and that saved him. Anyway, meanwhile, he needed to be treated for the whole thing, the diet afterwards and the cold beforehand. I mean, he was really not in good shape. So Yalta was Reb Nachman's wife, and she was in a position of a lot of authority, because we know that Reb Nachman, she was the Rosh Bezdin, and she didn't care about fighting the staff for the Reish Galusa, because she was also, her father was a Reish Galusa, not the same one, but still. So she heard about this. She had him taken into a bathhouse and had him stand in the hot bath. I mean, he went through so much sweating that it was like the water turned to blood, and his flesh was covered with these round marks from all of the things that he had eaten from that meat. Rav Yosef, when he got cold, over cold. Now remember that Rav Yosef was blind, so he would have to do something that wasn't dangerous. So this is the Marsha points out. We're not gonna say, that anybody who needed to do things, he could do anything, but blind people could end up injuring themselves. What are they gonna do? They're gonna cut down trees or, use any kind of tool that's dangerous. So Rav Yosef was blind. So what he would do is he would take charge of the millstone and he would turn it, which is very tough. And Rav Sheshes was also blind. So he would be Isaac in dragging very heavy loads from one location to another. So he had these kishure, which were building beams. And he would say, G'dayla malacha shemechamemet et ba'aleha. It's really good to work out. Make sure that you get to a gym. Omar le Reish Galusa Rav Sheshes. So could you explain to us, said the Rav Sheshes, also, why do you never eat in my house? So Rav Amram Chasida wasn't the only one. So Rav Sheshes said, because your staff stinks. You can't trust them for anything. And I'm telling you that your guys could be serving you Aver Menachai. So I hope you enjoy it. Ah, come off of it, says the Reish Galusa. Who says? Mi yema. So Rav Sheshes says, you want me to prove it? Yeah, go ahead, prove it. Okay. I'll prove it to you. Rav Sheshes tells the guy that always is with him and takes him around, he says, do me a favor, go into the kitchen. When they're not looking, steal one leg off of the animal that they're preparing and just bring it to me, okay? Fine. He goes in. And then Rav Sheshes says to the staff, all right, so now, how about, butchering that animal, bringing it all out over here so we can choose the parts we like. Okay, so they bring out all the cuts of the animal, but there's only three legs. So Rav Sheshes says, well, you're serving us an animal with three legs? And one of the legs was chopped up, which makes it a treifa, the back leg is treifa. No, they say, no, we just didn't bring out the other leg. I said, go back into the kitchen, cut off a leg from an animal, bring it out, and now they've got four legs. So he has his guy take out the other leg and put it down. And he says, what a fascinating animal you got here. Five legs, huh? Not bad. All right, so he basically showed them up. So I take tlat karyotivikame. So he says to them, what kind of animal is this? A three-legged animal? So they run into the kitchen. So they bring another leg from another animal. He says to his guy, okay, put down the other leg. So now he puts down the other leg. Otva, omalohu, well, so now we've got a five-legged animal, huh? Omar Le, so the Reish Galusa said, all right, I see. So I'll tell you what, if you want to eat here and you want to make sure it's kosher, so let them actually prepare everything in front of you, and, you know, you send in your guy in there, and he'll be very careful to make sure everything is kosher, and then you'll have a good hashgacha. So Reb Sheshi says, okay, fine, if you're willing to do that. So he sends his guy in. Krivu taka kamayim. So they bring out the serving time, you know, the little serving tables that they used to use, and they bring this beautiful piece of meat, but they give Reb Sheshi the ristana, the chanka chamta. So what they do is they bring out the, there's a special little piece of meat that has a bone in it, a famous bone that was used to kill the mother-in-law. This was a woman who wanted to get rid of her mother-in-law. And she knew that there was a piece of meat that's got a little bone in it that you could choke on. So she cuts out that piece of meat, gives it to her mother-in-law. The mother-in-law doesn't realize that she's eating that. And she chokes to death. So they take this piece of meat and they give it to Reb Sheshi, hoping that he'll choke to death too. That way they get rid of this problem guy. All right. So what does he do? He feels it, right? Gashashe, I mean, he's blind, so he can't tell what they're feeding him. Gashashe v'shakla, he takes it, and he puts it in his handkerchief, and he wraps it up. Now, after everybody eats, they were watching very closely, and they see that he took the whole piece of meat, not just that little piece, he took the whole piece of meat and wrapped it in the handkerchief. So they come running into the Reish Galusa. Somebody's walked off with a beautiful silver becher. You'll notice there's a little bit of a pattern here. Avri Menachai, Sheshes. And what about now? Silver bechers? Wow, very interesting. Okay, so they say somebody has stolen the silver becher. We need to take a look in everybody's pockets and see what they got. So this way they're going to be able to get his handkerchief, see what he's got wrapped up in there. So they take it, and they show the Reish Galusa. You see, this phony, he didn't even want to eat. Here's the whole piece of meat. And he only was doing all of this just to cause trouble and to accuse your staff. It's outrageous. See this? So Reb Sheshi says, look, I really didn't want to insult the Reish Galusa's kitchen. But I can tell you that I am very sensitive, being blind, and I could tell immediately that there was some kind of filthy nega on this animal, and that they were feeding the Reish Galusa basically rotten meat. I did try to eat it, and I immediately tasted some tamah dechivrais, and it had leprosy. So they said to the Reish Galusa, that's crazy, the guy's nuts. Chivra lo avid lanayidna. I mean, sometimes maybe some of the servants would have, we didn't have anything over here except the meat that we took care of ourselves. So Reb Sheshi says to them, really? Why don't you go back into the kitchen, bring out the skin of the animal that you prepared? Sure enough, they find the white spot right there on the place where that piece of meat was taken. And this is Reb Chista Shita. He says, well, you could see, I guarantee you, there's a white spot. There it is. Uchma b'chivra, chivra b'chmasra. That's called a lakusa. They found it, and sure enough. Anyway, so that was awful. Now, he's really wiped them out, right? So Kikanafik, as he's going out from the house, they decided, we're going to get rid of this bum once and for all. So they dig a pit in front of the house where he's going, and they cover it over with, you know, a nice kind of little cloth, and as soon as you step on it, you go flying down into the pit. And they figured, pits, I remember that. And they figured, okay, we'll get rid of him in the pit. So they put this mat on top of it, and they say, oh, sir, you look very tired. Why don't you just lie down over here? So Reb Chista is there, and Reb Sheshi is blind, so we figured he would know. So Reb Chista goes, it's okay. So Reb Sheshi immediately understands something is wrong. So there was a kid there, and he says to the kid, tell me what pasuk you just read today. So he reads to him, Netelecha yimincha o'al smolcha. Turn aside, either to the right or the left. This was where he was going to have to kill him, right? So he said, I'm going to have to shoot you, so turn aside. So he said, okay, turn aside. So he says to the guy that was walking him, what do you see in front of you? He says, I see this a mat that's right on the ground. Don't take me over the mat. Go anywhere else except the mat. So hador mine. The boss said, enough, actually. After they managed to get away from the Rish Galusas, the Rishkalusas said, how did you know? I thought you were going to ask me why I cleared my throat. I said, what do you mean, how did I know? First of all, you cleared your throat. That was enough of a warning that something's wrong. Then I asked the kid, Psokli Psukecha. And besides, you really think I'm stupid? If these guys were being nice to me and they told me to lie down, I figured that's a death sentence. That was bad. Enough of a riot for me. And these Hashidei Avdi Lo Male, these people are not in favor of my continuing to live. Okay, we will continue the exciting stories of Shadim, Kordaikuses, and all types of other strange type of different mythological consciousnesses tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, for Zeicha to meet. See you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Meanwhile, Hine El Yeshuati Eftach Velo Efchad. Kol Tov, everyone. Thanks so much. Bye-bye, Laila Tov.